I'm up here now working on a tiny house project that we're about to open in about 2 weeks. It'll be added to our, we have 8 yurts, the tiny house, the cabin that we rent out, and then we can on 4th of July weekend we had 70 different campers, in tents. Tents
Wow.
and vans, So the property is big. It holds a lot of people.
Hello, friends and travelers. Thanks for listening. You are riding along on the Hostel Road Trip Podcast. Our mission is to spread awareness of the true hostel experience in the Americas and share stories from the fascinating hosts who create those unique facilities. I'm your host, Jimmy Black, joined alongside co-founder of International Travelers House, Bobby Dyer. Each session, we sit down with hostel operators or travel influencers to hear about their road to success, discuss trending hostel topics, and close with tips for travelers who are seeking to have the ultimate experience when visiting each destination. You can't afford to miss this trip. Now fasten your seatbelts and let's hit the road.
Welcome back to the Hostel Road Trip Podcast. Second episode of the week for us. We had a great episode with Ryan at the Monterey Hostel, and now we're meeting with Jim Kennett, founder of the Northwest Portland Hostel, and also the founder of the NAHA, the North American Hostel Association, and who I like to call the Yoda of the hostel industry in the U.S. Jim Kennett, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And of course, I'm also joined with my co-founder and business partner, Bobby Dyer.
Thanks, Jimmy. Yeah, great to be here with Jim. All right.
Yeah, well, yeah, we've been really excited to get you on an episode. And we were trying to get you and the Bunk and Brew guys at the same time. And I told Bob, I was like, these are three different episodes we could do. So, let's break it down and focus on the Northwest Portland Hostel. And I think it's so cool how long you have been in the industry and what a awesome journey you've had, and how much other hostel owners and operators and managers and aspiring owners can learn from your experience and your journey. So super excited to dive into it. But if you wouldn't mind, can you take us back to the beginning and when that was of like, how did you first get exposed to hostels? What made you want to do it and jump into your first one before we talk about that? Because I know that you didn't start at your current hostel. But how did you first get exposed to hostels?
Well, I guess you want the story of how I accidentally fell into my lifelong career, which, a lot of Americans discover hostels in Europe, but I was doing a trip after high school with my girlfriend in our Volkswagen bus around the US and Canada, and her brother gave us a membership card at then it was called American Youth Hostels.
Oh,
So
cool.
So we started staying in these hostels, and I discovered, a lot of these are privately owned. It'd be kind of a cool thing to do. It kind of sat in the back of my head. And, I graduated from Evergreen State College with a degree in social work, but I also did a 4-year carpenter's apprenticeship. So it was the two skills were perfect for running a hostel, dealing with people, dealing with buildings. And, I got lured to the Southern Oregon coast with an amazing job offer, which I did for a couple of years. And that was caretaking the ranch for Ann and Nancy Wilson of the rock group Heart. So I did that for a couple of years. And then I got tired of building their empire. And a friend and I saw this condemned building in Old Town Bandon on the Southern Oregon coast. We had very little money. I say we had $50 in our pocket, but I think it was more than that. but we had, so we put the word out to friends, and we found three friends that each threw in $1,000 each. We were able to buy this old condemned building for $2,000 down. And then we were like, what are we going to do with it? So we started renovating, and then the idea of let's do a hostel because we're on the Oregon coast. And so we ended up opening the Sea Star Hostel. Had bought
awesome.
The building in 79, opened the hostel in 1980. So there was five of us as partners. After 2 years, everybody else wandered away and left me there to you know, enter my lifelong career, not knowing it. But I bought them all out and then continued to, you know, for 10 years in that location. And
you remember those first, hundred days when you opened that, or the first day when you opened?
Well, you know, we licensed it through American Youth Hostels because it was great marketing back then. There was no internet. It was all about handbooks and brochures. And,
wow.
They were distributing handbooks in 78 countries, right? So it was excellent marketing. That's how I got involved there. So they licensed us on a promise. I had one of their people come in and look at the place about 9 months before, and he was like, "Really, you're going to have this thing ready as a hostel by June?" And I was like, "Yep." But June rolled around, and we still had the common room was still set up with a table saw. We were just building the bunk beds. So, and I had no idea how many people were going to show up, but all these foreign travelers started knocking on the door. And so we just did work exchange when we first opened. We were like, "Well, you know, we've got a place for you. We're going to have you set up your own bunks, and we're not going to check."
That's great.
That's how it got going. And I still have lifelong friends from those first 6 months, you know, people that came for a night and left 3 or 4 weeks later.
So, yeah, that is special. We have some of that as well, you know, people that we were the first guests or the first staff members that we still stay in contact with. It's such a special time and a special energy when a hostel's opening up like that, and then it goes on for a long run. I'm curious, you've had such a range from 1980 all the way through the 80s, 90s, turn of the century. What's like the biggest changes in the backpacker guest clientele been that you could notice from that vast amount of experience you've had?
Yeah, big changes. You know, I remember people expect more. They yes. pay more too. You know, when we first opened up, it was $2.50 a night. But you helped clean the hostel. You know, you didn't have
chores.
You didn't have all these fancy amenities. We had a little stand on the counter that said, "We have a hair dryer and an alarm clock for your use." You know, and people would come up and they would be checking in, and they'd read that and they'd go, "Oh wow, they have a hair dryer we can use." You know, so that nowadays, nowadays they expect the world. You know, and we have to give it to them as much as we can. So.
That's interesting.
Expectations, you know, but people pay for those things that they want. You know, they pay, you know, 40, 50, 60 bucks a night, so they don't have to do a cleaning chore. So they can have a internet plugged next to their bed and, you know, and have Wi-Fi and activities. You know, people want activities at the hostel now, which we're really good at providing. So.
Absolutely. Now, what year did you, so 10 years you did that, and then it was in 1990 that you moved to Portland proper and opened up the Northwest Hostel as an HI affiliate, right?
Yeah. So there was so American Youth Hostels turned into HI USA. So we just kind of stayed on. I got involved in the organization, and I was elected to the national board as the representative for all the private hostels in the organization. So I fought for all the rights for private hostels that were part of HI for
That's awesome.
Years and years. I was on the board for probably 15 years or so. So my theory was, if there's something you're not happy with, get involved and make it better.
So, that's great. That's sage advice right there. Do something about it. Get involved. Before we go into more of the Northwest Portland Hostel, because I want to talk about how, and it's just a great example for other people, how you started in one house and then slowly took over the entire city block almost and turned it into your own compound. But for HI, since you were so intimately involved, as a lot of people are questioning and asking, especially during the pandemic, they closed down and sold so many operations. What do you think the future of HI is in the U.S. market? Do you think that they'll grow back, or are they kind of still in a consolidation mode?
Well, you know, HI, back in the day, like I said, before the internet, was very powerful. And they
Yeah.
had pretty strict standards, but we ran a good hostel, so we didn't have to do a lot of extra stuff to meet their standards. But you know, once the internet came out and you know, organization or companies like Hostelworld jumped in, then HI became less significant as a marketing tool for private hostels. So you stayed in and you tolerated the bureaucracy, or you dropped out. And then you know, so I think they just kind of got weaker and weaker. They focused a lot on the big city hostels, which was where they could make their money. And then they were on this roll to get in these mid-size hostels. But then, and they were doing a pretty good job. They had Houston, they had one in Portland, they had Richmond, you know, they had, I don't know, 8 or 10 decent mid-sized hostels out there. The pandemic hit and they just sold them all. They kept the big money makers. And it was a shame to see that happen in the organization. So I think they're going
That's
to
gonna be
focus on
interesting.
their big city hostels. And I don't know if they'll ever get back to the point where they could, you know, do smaller or mid-sized hostels.
Yeah, that's a
So,
shame. A
yeah.
lot of really cool properties, and you know, some of them I wish I was in a better situation in that time period, but of course we were all just holding on to our boots. But you know, some of the gems like they had over in I think Martha's Vineyard or you know Hyannis area, you know, oh, that's I grew up around that area, so what an amazing place to have a hostel. And I've actually ran into guests staying at our hostels that are like, do you know they closed that down? I was going there for 20 years, the same week every week. Yeah, so it's sad to hear that impact that the pandemic had on even such a staple like HI.
So I don't think HI USA will ever come back to where they were. You know, not in the way they were going about it. But I think they'll probably, you know, continue to develop a few more big city hostels when they can. They really only have the ability to do one at a time, you know. And maybe it takes 5 years to get that one up and running and stabilizing and making money. So it's not going to be a big competition, you know, other than the ones that are already existing. That's
That's
my
a
question.
no, that
And I think very
so.
few people know HI USA as well as I do, even their own board
Yes.
members. So.
Yeah, that's why I was curious to hear your opinion on that, because it is, you know, kind of, it's such a surprise to a lot of people, and you know, curiosities of that and how it will turn out.
So
That.
there was a little bit of a jump, you know, when I sold my hostel in Bandon in 1990, I did move to Portland, but I opened a hostel on the northern coast in Seaside, the Seaside hostel. And I opened it in 94, but I never lived there. I hired a manager and I would go over and, you know, kind of spend time there, and I stayed in Portland. And then in 1998 is when I decided that I would go ahead and open a hostel. I knew there was a handful of people that I knew were looking at properties to open a hostel in Portland, and I thought, you know, I'm just gonna jump into the race.
Nice.
Took me
Did
about
you?
a year. You know, it was all about location. You know, so it took me about a year to find that perfect location,
Is
not
great.
back in downtown, but close enough in the city center where you could walk to everything, but be in a really good, vibrant neighborhood. So.
Did you buy that location? Is that what the would that be the first place? Well, you purchased your first place outright with the property. Did you buy that first property in Portland as well before you started to expand and purchase?
It was a vacant building. It had been six apartments, small apartments, but a women's shelter had used it prior to us moving in and renovating. And that was what we call our group center now. It's our one of our smaller buildings. So we bought that on a contract because, you know, didn't have a lot of money still. and still don't have a lot of money now that the pandemic's hit.
Now, when you say contract, like owner financing?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so, great. Like a private note. Okay, no bank. So
I met with the owner, told him our plan. He was happened to be totally into the neighborhood, and he thought this is a great thing for Northwest Portland.
Oh,
having
awesome!
A hostel here, so he gave us a really great deal, and you know, 4 or 5 years later, we refinanced for the bank, which was our agreement with him, and then our second building, you know, 7 years later, he happened to own that building as well. So nice. All the time that we were running this 34 bed hostel that was full to the max, you know, in a city like Portland, every time I would run into Rick Michelson, that guy, you know, at different meetings in the neighborhood, I would always say, hey, the Elliston would make a great hostel, you know. And then one day he said, let's meet and talk about that. And so, you know, I had been, you know, as a carpenter, I had been buying and selling houses, kind of flipping them in Portland. So I was kind of, I had a few fourplexes. I had some equity and some property. So when he said that and he was willing to give us another really good deal on the price, he carried the contract for this 8,000 square foot building that tripled our size. You know, we bought that on a contract with him, another agreement where we'd have him cashed out in 5 years. And, you know, I knew
awesome.
If we could get the renovations done, get the bunk beds in and fill the bunk beds, that we could, you know, we could refinance for the bank. So we did that.
Did you always spend most of your time in the with your background in the carpentry side, focusing on the facilities and the build out, or were you more in operations, or how did you kind of organize your?
Well, awesome. I mean, back in the day, I was doing both.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
Shutting the table saw off to go check somebody in, you know, in the first days, you know, maybe get them involved in whatever project we were working on. And then as we, you know, as we get bigger and bigger and we're able to just support more staff and hire a manager, yeah, then I still always stayed pretty hands-on. And you know, my wife, Britta, is extremely involved in the Northwest.
Yeah, she's great, yeah.
And we met, you know, we met the first year I opened Portland in 1998. She came over from Germany on a work and travel visa to, because she wanted to improve her English. Now her English is better than mine, but and then she came back 2 years later and did a 2 year internship at our hostel. And then came back a third time, and that's when we got together. So she's been, nice. You know, involved since 1998 when we opened the doors, and again weren't quite finished, but it was June and we needed the income, so we you know, we set up the card table and the cigar box as our front desk and
yeah,
in Portland, and we you know, and she helped, you know, she has a logistics major in college, and then she went on to get her MBA at Portland State University, so she's got quite the business background.
Oh, she's sharp.
Nice. Yeah. When you look back on your you know, your years of running the different hostels, and we've had our hostels now for 12 years and do the same reflection, what times do you reflect back that you feel your hostel was firing on all cylinders or doing its best? Is there a certain like year or time or like an energy that you guys were like, wow, can't get any better than this? Is there a moment in time that you reflect back that you maybe chase in other years? But
yeah, I would say 3 months before the pandemic hit. We had received the announcement from Hostel World that we got the award for the third best midsize hostel in the world in January.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And then in March the pandemic hit, you know. So so it was at that point, you know, we built our new building. We had five buildings on the block. We decided to take our small parking lot in 2017 and build a five-story building because I'm a perfectionist. Britta's a perfectionist. And, you know, we're missing things. We're missing really good common space where we could do activities and programs and music. We were missing a bar or a restaurant. So we knew if we built a new building from the ground up, we could take that ground floor and we could devote that to the hostel commons, which we have, where we do a lot of activities. And we added the hostel cafe, which, you know, in the evening serves as kind of a informal bar, you know, where we've got 12 local beer taps and cider and kombucha. And then, you know, we serve food, really good food. You know, I have this philosophy. I wouldn't give to the travelers anything that I wouldn't eat. And I'm pretty picky.
Yeah, that's a good philosophy.
Yeah. You know, we don't eat processed food. We don't eat food that's been frozen, you know. I mean, we eat meat. We like to know where it came from. So we do all that in the cafe, and people are really surprised. They think, oh, food in a hostel is going to be really mediocre. But we have such great food that the neighborhood has, you know, really embraced the cafe as well.
Would you say that the common area you feel was the really game changer that put you guys over the edge to win the Husker? Or what do you feel
the
was the
common area and the cafe? When we had to close the cafe for a year and a half during the pandemic, it was like, you know, you could just feel that important piece was missing. You know, it was like the hostel was dead. Of course, there wasn't any travelers either, but even after we reopened, you know, with the doors closed, you know, because restaurants weren't allowed to reopen, they could only do food to go. But you know, the hostel commons and the cafe, I mean, it's the new building, the main floor, it's like a little beehive, you know, with people coming and going. And
right.
Yet we have other buildings, so you don't feel like you're staying in a 200 bed hostel when you stay with us, because you know we have these historic houses with private rooms that so people can kind of get away, and they're kind of quiet in their 100 year old you know, renovated room that they're staying in. And and when they want activity, they can just walk over to the hostel commons, or the courtyard is a magical place too. Right outside the commons. And we did this feature, you saw it when you were there, where we have a glass wall that opens from the hostel commons.
That's awesome.
It's lovely. Yeah.
And the courtyard is covered now. So yeah,
indoor outdoor common spaces are so important for people to connect and host,
yeah.
Right? You want to host
yeah.
a party and not have a good place to hang out.
Exactly, for sure. Yeah.
And I think that your place is just so magical in the way that you did combine all of those spaces and increase your bed count without losing the intimacy. It's really impressive how your flow and the feng shui of the place, you know, you can tell that there was a lot of thought that went into it with the custom build complemented with the historical houses. Really an awesome spot and a great model for people to take. Before I jump over, and I want to talk a bit about your awesome farm hostel with the yurts, but with the restaurant and the cafe, which is such a different animal. We tried to do one time years back and had a lot of trouble with it. Do you find that makes a similar amount of profit as a lot of the South American hostels or hostels in Mexico? They'll make most of their profit from the bar. Do you find that that's the case there, or that it's more of a complementary inclusion to the experience, and the bread and the butter is still the hostel?
Yeah, the bread and the butter is still the hostel. You know, it's hard to it's hard to make it in the restaurant world.
Oh yeah,
we have the hostel cafe as an important vibe for the hostel. You know, and it's the heart and soul for us is the hostel itself. So everything we do centers around making the hostel better. So,
yes,
you know, where we might stay open till, you know, midnight, it's not because we're going to make a profit from 10 p.m. till midnight, but the travelers that, you know, fly in on a late flight or come in on a late bus have a place where they can get something to eat and grab a beer.
Oh, yeah, so, I mean, and I think that's a great thing for people to hear on that. Don't put all your eggs or all your chips in that basket of the restaurant, which is such a difficult and competitive and complex market. But if you can build in the scene like you did, that it's a complementary element to the hostel business, and don't forget that the hostel is the main business And it should, you know, the restaurant and the cafe element, the bar element should be in complement to that. I think that's a safe way to put in a hostel bar or a cafe. So great example there. Now, how did the, which we got to visit the hostel farm that you have with amazing yurts and, you know, just the magical, like in the forest type of vibe. And I think you've got your music festival event coming up later this month or next month. How did that project come about? Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, Britta and I were looking for 5 acres, and it was right after the big real estate crash of 2008. So property was, there was a lot of property on the market. Our realtor that was looking for us called us and said, "We've got this 50-acre property," and we're like, "We're looking for 5 acres,"
Wow.
and they're like, "But this is being repossessed in about 2 weeks, and the price is like less than half of its appraised value." So we went and looked.
Wow.
It had the historic cabin on it, which was a wreck. Most people would have torn that cabin down, but it had been built by the homesteaders that arrived in a covered wagon. So with my carpentry skills and using Workaway and the WIRF program, we renovated that over about a 5 year period, just a little bit at a time. But it also had the sprawling ranch house that was built in the 1960s. So we were able to take that and make some staff quarters, a kitchen for our staff to use, and then we carved out about a third of it to create a little apartment for ourselves when we're up here. But we ended
Wow.
up, we ended up with 50 acres, and we were like, okay, what are we going to do with it? We're not going to go up there and sit on 50 acres ourselves. So we might as well get some stuff going here. And so we were involved in the music scene, folk music scene in Portland, when we started out by doing two songwriting camps in the summer, where people would come
Oh.
a week at a time, and we had some instructors, and it was a pretty cool experience. And then from that, we added the old time camp out that you were mentioning is going to happen Labor Day weekend, and then
Labor Day weekend, that's it. Oh, yeah.
then we have an Irish music camp out. We call it a camp out because it's really not a festival where people come to listen to music. It's a gathering for the musicians to come and circle around and play together. And then they do some we have like an open mic, in the evenings where people can perform, but it's mostly workshops and just jamming together.
When
So
is the Irish one?
that is the third weekend of August.
Third weekend of
And
August.
then
Oh
our
man,
old time one has now expanded to a 5 day. So it starts on Wednesday and then it ends on Labor Day, the Monday
wow.
Labor Day.
Oh man, I got to get up there one of these years to see
Yeah.
one of those. I love Irish music and I love folk music too. And in the city bus that you rolled out there, and I know I love the story you told me about it. You brought that thing out there and you couldn't get it through, but I loved how you brought that in and complemented the property with this amazingly repurposed city bus that's so functional. I ended up hanging out there for a few hours late night, but just a cool, a really rad feature to the property in addition to the yurts.
So we did just these events for a while, and then we decided, let's open this up for camping. First it was just 5 months of the year. When the pandemic hit, then we started going year round because
Wanted to get out.
the hostel was dead, but everybody wanted to get out of town to places like that, like Zigzag. It's Zigzag Mountain Farm is what we call it. In fact, I'm up here now working on a tiny house project that we're about to open in about 2 weeks. It'll be added to our we have 8 yurts, the tiny house, the cabin that we rent out, and then we can on 4th of July weekend we have 70 different campers, in tents,
Whoa.
and vans, so the property is big. It holds a lot of people.
Do you bring guests
That's
back and
awesome.
forth? Like, are you do you do tours back and forth, or is there much connection for
No,
people?
there is public transportation to get up here. You can get to a half a mile of the place, and then if you call us, we'll probably go pick you up. But
Okay.
No, you know, that doesn't, we tried tours for a couple of years, but you know, with all the regulations and insurance and everything, you know, we kind of leave it to
Yeah.
people who specialize in that.
Yeah, it's a
But
tough business.
the bus story was, you know, I mean, Britta always points out the fact that she happened to be in Germany visiting her mother when I bought the bus. So she came home and we were the proud owners of a city bus. She's like, what are we gonna do with that? And of course
She left two
now she knows
unattended.
it's a main feature of Zigzag. So
Oh,
we brought it up
it's so cool.
and we, you know, stripped all the seats out, put in the camper's kitchen, and then in the back area where there's always the little step up, you know, we kind of made that a little common space for people to hang out as well. So it's great.
Yeah. And
People
so now this,
they're
what?
driving the bus, you know, kids and adults.
Oh no, it's this one thing. And then so, but now the Zigzag is open year round now.
Is, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome,
Yeah.
awesome to
Yeah.
know.
Because we're up in a ski area. So, you know, in the winter, there is the shoulder time before the snow falls, where it's a little quiet. But once the snow falls, and, you know, we get a lot of people that are snowboarders and skiers that come up and rent, stay in yurts. We started heating the yurts during the pandemic. So.
Nice. And then I want to make sure that we also touch on the Naha Association and all the cool things that are going on there before we let you go. So if we could just take a few more minutes and talk about that. You obviously you formed this, which is such a Herculean task that we appreciate and understand. And you know, had the great first meeting, and I love that you had the first meeting as like a gathering to take suggestions and feedback from everyone. It made it very inclusive. I think it's awesome that you've created this board with different sub board committees and got everyone involved, and really just, you know, kudos to you and two thumbs up across the board on that. And we loved the first conference that you had this past April. Had a great time, really amazing connections with everyone, good co quality content, and just a fantastic experience. And I really enjoyed the post trip as well. But if you could tell, give us an update on what's going on with the Naha, any new things happening, and what's going to be the location for the next one.
So Naha was born just before the pandemic. In fact, we were going to do the first hostel conference in Portland. I think it was September of 2020, and of course, you know, that wasn't going to happen with the pandemic hitting. But we had everything planned, and we were getting lining up speakers and all, and then we were like, okay, is this really going to be over by Easter, like our great president told us? And when we found out that it was just you know, more nonsense coming from him, you know, we canceled it, and then we all went into this mode of, you know, fighting for survival of our own hostels. So nothing much happened with the North American Hostel Association until after we started getting back on our feet. And then a few of us, you know, Jay and Frankie from the Bend Hostel, Lauren from you know, they have the hostel in New York, and for a short time started a hostel in Portland, but, you know, it folded due to the pandemic. But Lauren was pretty Lauren and her sister Lee, they're pretty amazing people. You know, we met them as competitors, and you know, just welcomed them into the community. Wanted to, you know, work with them like we always do with what I call friendly competition.
Right.
And Lauren was, we told Lauren and Lee about the Naha, and they were like, we'll help, you know, get this going. And then so that was sort of the spark. We sort of needed, you know, a little bit more energy, and then we reached out to Frankie and Jay. Yep, we're in, and then a few other people, and so we just kind of started meeting. You remember we had that planning meeting in April, which you guys came to
Yeah.
the year before, and that was our feeler. You know, we looked around the country, and we were like, Let's invite about 15 of the best hostel operators that we know of to Portland, and see if you see what the you know what the barometer is for getting this organization off the ground. So we invited 16 people, and 15 showed up on their own dime, right?
Yeah,
nice.
Guys. And so that was like, you know, this is a ripe time, you know, coming out of the pandemic. We need an organization, you
It
know.
was.
You know, HISA is focusing on themselves, trying to stay alive. There's no other organization in North America, so that's how it came about. And then from there, we formed a board of directors. We twisted a few arms of people that we thought, you know, we're good operators. They told us they didn't have much time to put in, but we were like, just, you know, right now we need your name, you know, we need five or six of us that are going to do some work. And then we need other people that, you know, other folks want to join in. So, you know, that's kind of how we operated for the first year. We got that amazing conference off the ground. You know, we've heard nothing but praise. You know, we brought people in from Europe and South America as speakers and attendees, and you know, it was just what we needed to kind of launch the thing. And then after that, where we're at now is we went back to all of those board members and we said, you know, there's a whole group of people that want to be actively involved. So reconfirm, you know, this is a time that if you don't feel like you have the time to commit, we understand. You know, go ahead and you know, resign, and we'll get 13 board members that are really willing to put in some time. So that's the stage we're at now. We sent out that the executive committee sent out that kind of invitation, and six board members decided, yeah, I don't have the time, and I'd rather have somebody on the board that, you know, that does have the time. So six people resigned, and right now we have I don't know, something, it's probably around 15 or 16 people that we're sending a short application to. Bobby is one of them.
Hey, that's exciting, Bob Dyer. Tell your mom.
So as soon as you get that, you got to send that back in. Bobby's a shoe in, I can tell you. So,
well, thank you. Honor to help.
Yeah, and then we're gonna, you know, that should really snowball us even more. You know, we've got almost 100 hostels as members, and our goal is, you know, I mean, everybody should be a member. That's running a hostel in North America. That's
what was the
goal.
What was the biggest takeaway you felt that the membership wanted after the conference? It was all said and done, like, what direction were you inspired to go, or where did you feel that people wanted to go from there?
I mean, a big direction is they want to have some resources, you know, like we have the WhatsApp, the North American.
That's
WhatsApp
great.
We're putting together a list of people that have experience that are willing to be a resource for various things, from hostel development to, you know, to you name it, technology, you know, so that new hostel operators or even current hostel operators that have just been operating out there in a vacuum can reach out and say, hey, you know, what front desk system should I use, or what, you know, what kind of activities are you guys doing? I mean, you see all the questions that come up on the North American WhatsApp.
Right. Yeah. It's amazing. So much value.
We're taking it a step further, and we're creating a list of people that are willing to be mentors. I'm mentoring two guys that are managing and looking to buy the Seaside Hostel over on the.
Oh, cool.
And so they call me whenever they have questions, and you know, I'm helping them from everything from how to negotiate with the current owner to buy the property, some creative financing, to, you know, how to manage a good hostel and what improvements they should make to bring that hostel back up to where it should be. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. The social aspect is another big thing that people want. Like I said, people have been out there and operating in a vacuum. They might be up in northern Maine and they never meet other hostel operators. So at least once a year they can come to this conference. And then I'm looking at once we get going a little bit, is having some regional meetings where we just get together and we don't have to put a lot of time into presenters and all. We just have a big potluck and
mixer. That's nice.
A mixer.
I think that's a really good idea. We were actually talking about that earlier today. They used to have those Darren Overby used to have those hostel meetups through hostel management that were more localized, or in this city or in this region. So that can be a really cool element to bring. But so the last question has to be, where is the next annual conference going to be? Has that been decided? We'll be back in Portland, or are there a couple of options?
Our goal is to move it around North America. Because we're so strong starting out in the U.S., we kind of thought it would be in the U.S. for a while. But let me back up a little bit. When we formed the board of directors, we decided let's keep a board position for a rep from Mexico, a rep from the U.S., and a rep from Canada. So we make sure at least there's a little bit of representation in there. So we filled the position for Mexico recently, and it's I'm embarrassed to say it's Marco, but there's two Marcos that were at the conference. So I would have to look up his last name, but he has the a little chain of hostels in Mexico.
Oh yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hostel J, right?
Yes, that's right. So
awesome.
We reached out to him and said, are any of your hostels capable of doing a conference? And he said yes. He's got a hostel just south of I'm getting old and forgetful here.
It'll be warm and sunny in Mexico either way.
It's on the East Coast. It's that famous town where all the couch potatoes from America go.
Okay.
Cancun.
Cancun. All right. I thought you were going to leave us in suspense.
I hate Cancun, but south of Cancun by about an hour, he's got a hostel. And so we're looking at that. We haven't totally firmed it up, but he's talked with his managers there, and it's looking like that's probably where we'll be for our next meeting.
Sounds like a good recon trip you're going to have to do. You go do test margaritas down there. Make sure they're good.
I told him I'd come down early. For sure.
Nice.
Oh, that's great.
You guys could join me.
I'm happy to go do some recon and margaritas for that. But
I think, Mexico in April, people are going to want to go there. I think we'll get a pretty good turnout.
I agree. Yeah.
Great time of the year.
Yeah. And then we'll look at, there's a couple of hostels willing to host it in 20, what would that be, 2026 up in Canada.
You're like the Olympics.
Yeah, so I think we'll be successful jumping around, the three main countries in North America. So.
Yeah, well, we love going to them, so we're excited that you're continuing to plan them, and we'll stay tuned to hear what the final destination is for our next NAHA conference. But Jim Kennett, the Northwest Portland Hostel and the NAHA Association, thank you so much for joining us on the Hostel Road Trip podcast. And my business partner, Bobby Dyer, as well. Thank you guys so much.
Jimmy, if I could jump in, we should mention that any hostels listening to this that are not part of NAHA, you should join it. So just,
absolutely. I try to drop that every episode.
All right.
Good. Get on it. Yeah, we want to see you all in Mexico, you hostel owners and operators and managers. So get on it and get signed up. But thanks again, Jim. Thanks, Bobby. And stay tuned for our next episode next week.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, guys.